With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Yes, this is the 5-Year Plan Podcast.
Hooray!
Pod 171.
Ooh.
Sponsored by Vector Printing for all your print and embroidery needs. Go to vector.co.uk. That's Vector with a
K.
Okay.
Correct. And JCIS, the Global Research and Brand Consultancy from South London. Visit jc-is.com.
I will.
Oh, very good. Well,
we missed it. We tried to do it last week, but we simply didn't have the gravitas.
Because you forgot the words.
Yeah.
Well, we all did it. We all chimed in, but I think it's better when James does it on
his
own.
It's better. James has got the gravitas.
Yeah, gravitas. Good. And those voices, of course, are the voices of Kevin Day.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Jay Lindicott.
Good morning.
We're doing an early morning pod the evening after.
It's 8:30 in the early
morning.
It's
very early.
Really early.
I know out in the real world some people have been at work for an hour, but this is...
Not the real world.
Not the real world. And the reason we did it at 8:30 this morning is because Andy Street couldn't make any other time, and now the little sod's not here.
Yep, thanks, Andy.
He's out earning money. In fact, since we started the podcast, he's earned
hundreds of thousands of pounds. Good. Well, since the last podcast, we've managed to play two games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A draw at Sunderland and a defeat at West Brom.
It's a point.
It's a point.
It is a point.
It is a point. First of all, though, let's talk about goals because we scored four goals in two games.
Yeah.
So
you said we?
Well, Connor Wickham has scored four goals in two games.
Luckily, I picked the right striker to make a foolish 10-goal promise for, didn't I? Swimming naked across Thornton Heath.
Did you say that?
About Adi Bayor.
If
I'd picked Connor Wickham, I'd be worried now.
You would be, yeah. Well, he's now joint top goal scorer with five.
Yes.
We did say previously on the pod in previous weeks that once he gets that first goal, I know he got injured after the Stoke game when he had to score, but once he gets rolling, that they might start coming, and that's exactly what's happened. They've been four really good finishes, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They have. That's been a bonus, because we also did say, if you cast your minds back to before the last five games, that we just had a run of quite difficult games, and we had five games coming up that were eminently winnable, and let's see where we are after those. And we got 2 points out of them. But yes, no, the Wickham... For the first time yesterday, I was genuinely not worried, but slight doubts start to creep in. But after last night, I'm genuinely not worried. And Wickham is one of the reasons. Mm. The second half performance in both games was very good,
and not just his goals. He was sort of doing
his
everything.
All-round play was good. But the goals, the goals were actually really good. So he looks,
he looks sharp.
He looks confident. He looks fit. He looks strong. What was interesting last night, I think, from the...
I'll tell you what I loved about... Sorry to not, Kev, but what I loved about last night was the way he celebrated as well. It's nice to see a player celebrating against their old club.
Yeah. Well, they didn't like him, did they? The fans didn't like him. There's rumours of unhappiness up there, but...
Yeah.
What was interesting, and I didn't see the whole game, I only saw sort of lengthy highlights, but it looked like the other players were looking towards him as well. Zahar and Balassi in particular were looking to get Wickham on the ball, and he was looking for the ball, which is...
Yeah, and he was using it well. I mean, we've seen before, haven't we, previously in the season, that when he was playing, he can hold the ball up well, he can bring people in, he's good in the air. They wasn't winning a lot of headers last night, but he's good at... He can shield it
on the floor.
He's very strong. He's got all the attributes, James, hasn't he, to be that perfect guard top, and now finally he's adding goals.
He was our man of the match last night. Even without the goals, I thought he was our best player. And as you say, everything was looking towards him. You know, it's just, and he's just his whole play. He's got so much strength. He spends a lot of time looking at his own team as well, with his back to the goal. And the fact he scored 4-2 is great, considering hardly ever looks at the goal. But he was, you know, he was looking at his team last night. And as you said just then, the players are looking to him as well. Maybe a little bit better distribution every now and again. Maybe a little bit further than about 2 or 3 yards in front of him, or behind him, or whatever. But I thought he was one of the real pluses of last night.
Apparently, as well, there's a stat flying around that he has scored with his last 5 shots on goal. They've all been on target, which is a very, very good rate. Similar to when Shamak a couple of years ago had a similar sort of rate, didn't he? So
if we can get the midfield giving him the ball as well as the two other forwards, then
can we put to bed then that Palace, this run of not scoring goals, can we put to bed the sort of the end of the lack of confidence of going forward and scoring goals? Do we look more like a team that's going to go forward and score now but each time?
Not each time, but we look like we've got goals in us, which is the encouraging thing. 2 goals in 2 away games. What we have to do now is get everything working together, because we've had, at different parts of the season, the midfield have been doing all right and the back four and the forwards haven't.
Wingers have done all right.
And at the moment, the back four are doing all right, the front three are doing well, and now the midfield's gone AWOL.
I think what I thought about last night was that... even though we got two goals at the weekend against West Brom, we didn't seem to put the fear of dread into the opponents that we were doing in the first half of the season. Mm-hmm. Whenever we're going forward now, I guess maybe Zahar and Blassie were slightly more on their game. We weren't getting that many goals from the front guys, but we seem to have been a little bit found out with our wingers, as we've spoken a lot about on the pod. I know Blassie's just come back and he's not 100% fit. And he did do it okay last night, and he will get better, and I think he'll prove an asset for the rest of the season. But I just don't think we have that. We don't seem to put that fear of dread into the opponent.
We're a confidence team, because we look very much like when we get a goal, we suddenly play 10 yards further up the pitch. But when we haven't, we look nervy and sort of timid at times, don't we?
Well, I think that's got a lot to do with the fact we haven't won for 11 games as much as anything. So, yes, it is a confidence game. You're asking that question. I mean, yes, it is.
You could say the same about Sunderland as well, though. Because as soon as we scored the first goal last night, we looked like we would score the second goal and then looked like we would hang on quite comfortably. The midfield problem, though, no one in midfield seems to be entirely sure what their job is.
Well, should we address the elephant in the room, which is that Kabai has been terrible.
Yeah, absolutely terrible. And I think we're really, really missing MacArthur as well, a lot more than I thought we would do.
Yeah. But somebody's got to... I think there were some ludicrous tweets last night from Palace fans, really ludicrous tweets from Palace fans, mainly about Hennessy, which we'll get on to that, and about Kelly. But the one sensible one said, nobody seems to, for want of a better word, stay at home anymore when we're attacking. It's like... who is it who's sitting in front of the back four line? Because even Jedi wasn't doing it last night. Just somebody needs to stay put. That's their job. I mean, and at the start of the season, we weren't scoring many goals, but the reason we weren't conceding is because we had two people. It was like Kabai and MacArthur were pretty much not leaving that sort of 20-yard circle in front of the back four. And now it's totally unoccupied ground, except in the FA Cup, the away game at Tottenham. We were defending how you should do that. The midfield players were in front of the back four, or you know, never far away from them, and now they just seem to be... there's no shape or pattern to the
and there was a lot of time Sunderland were getting in, exactly right, in that space in between the midfielders and the defence, and they were suddenly breaking with those three quick guys up front. But it's weird, because we were told Kabai wants to play deep. Kabai wants to sit and play there, and that's his job. He doesn't want to get further forward, even though Palace fans want to. So why is he suddenly now... not only out of form, out of position, out of confidence, out of everything?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, maybe he's missing MacArthur. I don't know. Maybe he's missing MacArthur. I thought on a plus side, I thought Much had a really good game last night. I thought Much... I think there's a lot of people, me included, who were not that keen on why we bought him and what he was going to add to the team. But I think he's proved it, especially last night and also a little bit against West Brom.
Well, he's getting a run now, isn't he?
He's getting a run, which, you know, again, it's that confidence thing. But... I think with Kabai, I think, you know, you've got Pardew. You've got to be harder on these players sometimes. You know, you've got to, I think he needs to get dropped, maybe, just to make him realise.
I was going to ask that. Is Kabai undroppable?
Well, I'd like to think not, but maybe he is in terms of Pardew. You know, I don't know. I in the same way that Wilf, last season, well, when we dropped Wilf and he came back?
Earlier this season.
And he dropped him. And, you know, not that... we look at Wilf in the same way as Kabai, because he didn't cost us £10 million. But it helped Wilf get back into it. And I think Kabay, maybe he's been floating a little bit. Great start to the season, all the plaudits. We're going to Europe, da-ding-da-ding-da-ding. And it's just drifted. And, you know, we can all look at the problems why, but I think Kabay has to shoulder some of the blame for this this run.
Well, he's got, the thing is, I think part of the problem with dropping him is that everyone says inside the club that apparently he's a great leader, in the dressing room he's brilliant.
Well, he's not on the pitch, though, is he?
But he's not, that, absolutely, at the moment he's not on the pitch. And the fact is, he is the senior professional. And it, whatever you think about Adebayor, so far it hasn't been a success in terms of goal scoring. But you look at his attitude on the pitch, he is a proper, experienced, mature professional. You can see him talking to the other players all the time. You can see him getting involved with the referee. You can see him doing his job properly. And Kabay at the moment isn't doing that. Kabay's floating through games.
There was one bit, wasn't there, where Sunderland broke and Kabay was moaning at the ref and he was just walking Sunderland had three players breaking on the counter-attack past him. And you think, no matter what you think about what's happened, talk to the ref, you've got to get back and track in, even if you don't get there, because it looks so bad.
One of the great things about Kabay that we spoke about at the beginning of the season, well, that maybe some of us didn't realise about his game, was the fact that he was tracking back. And he was a great, I was impressed by his defensive abilities, but in the way he just got in there. Right, okay, I'm going to get in there. I'm going to drag this team up. I'm going to drag this team with me. That wasn't happening last night. We used to get that from Jedinak, and he wasn't doing it last night either. He looks so out of sorts. I mean, Jedi looks a championship player at best at the moment. I hate to say it, you know, but and if you've got two supposedly great leaders in your team, Kabay and Jedi, not doing it. Then thank God we do have Connor Wickham, who's starting to play a little bit. And thank God we've got Blasip out, who's, you know, hopefully doing a little bit. And the defence is leaking a lot more goals than it should be, and we'll get on to that. But, you know, at least you feel slightly more confident than we did a while ago that we're not going to leak goals.
And the thing with Kabay as well, it's not that he's being a fancy down and he doesn't fancy a, for want of a better word, relegation struggle, which is two words. Because when Newcastle were in trouble, when Newcastle had their slide, Kabay was in the thick of it. Kabay was one of the players that all the Newcastle fans said, at least Kabay is here. So he is capable of getting in the trenches and doing a shift. And I think it can't be coincidence. He's just not the same player without MacArthur there, in which case you go, well, put somebody next to him that's like MacArthur, put Boateng in, or tell Jednak to not move from within 10 yards of Kabay, because it looks like somebody has to do... Well, it's not the hard work for him, because we're all boasting about his figures early in the season. Second highest tackle rate, highest interception rate. But at the moment, he it's only recently, to be fair, against Tottenham, we were singing his praises on the pod because he looked sharp and up to his old self and playing a little bit further forward.
I mean, I would have thought he'd have been really up for the game last night.
Back in the northeast. Kevin, you were pleased though that he, because you said previously on the pod that our players don't really sort of surround the ref enough. And when Wilf got taken out by Rodwell, Kabay was the first one there, wasn't he?
Probably for people who've never listened before, that would sound not indicative of the kind, gentle person I am. What my point has been recently, that for various reasons, and I think a lot of which is to do with Pardew wanting the England job, that we haven't shown that passion. I think sometimes all it takes is one massive tackle to turn a game round, and I think sometimes you need to show each other and the fans that you've got that passion, you're protecting your own players. So I was really pleased last night when Rodwell assaulted Zaha, that the Palace players did let the referee know that they were really cross about that tackle, and Rodwell got booked. He would have done anyway, I think, but... Also, it shows the Sunderland players that we're not going to be bullied and intimidated, and you do need a bit more of that. And you don't have to do it by cheating or constantly surrounding the ref, but you do have to stand up to other players, and we haven't been doing that recently. And I was pleased to see Kabay was the first one there last night. So he's not going to get dropped. The conversation's slightly pointless in a way, but I do think it's time.
Yeah, but we do have to fill up about an hour and 15 minutes.
We are not. It's quite early.
So there's a lot of pointless things we talk about, Kim, you know that.
And you'll notice that I'm now able to do a full sentence because I was halfway through a bacon sandwich in the first 5 minutes for the...
How was it?
It was lovely. Good. But as you know, because you just...
I had an egg sandwich because
you're a vegetarian, you just had an egg, but yeah, that's fine.
No, that's vegans are done.
Well, eggs. You know, eggs. Yeah.
Guys.
They're still baby animals, aren't they? Eggs.
Guys.
No, they're not. They're not fertilised.
Well, you might not be, but you know, you're not as much of a man as we are.
Well, that's a different debate.
All our eggs are fertilised on this side of the table.
My eggs are always in the same basket.
I think it's time. Boateng, everyone's talking about... Boateng, I'd like to see Boateng on the bench at least, right? And I'd like to see him start, and he probably won't until we're safe. But from what I can gather, he's going to be the young player of the year by a country mile. Yeah. Everyone around the club says how well he's playing. Came on at Swansea, showed plenty of confidence, could have scored. He's big, he's strong, he's mobile, he's young, he's got that youth factor. And when it's clear that the combination, we're really struggling to get the right combination in midfield at the moment, and it comes back to what we're saying, suddenly Much is playing all right, but the other two, and it will happen before the end of the season. We'll get a couple of games when everyone plays.
When it all clicks.
Yeah. And we will get the points that we need to stop ourselves looking over our shoulder. But at the moment, we can't get the combination right in midfield. MacArthur's not going to come back. Punchin's nearly fit, so we'll see what happens then. But why not give another option the chance? And Boateng is the sort of player, I wouldn't bring Lee back in, because what we're missing is a proper defensive midfield player. And Jednak and Gabay are not doing it. So when you got one that's doing that job brilliantly for the young players, bring him in.
There's always an argument, isn't it, that Palace fans, we've said on the pod in the past, well, in the Premier League, it's harder to bring in youth players to risk them and stuff. But Manchester United, against Arsenal, had 5 youth team players in their squad. And they won that game, and they're proving that actually sometimes if you do go with the kids, then it can pay off.
And not only that, but look how much it lifted the atmosphere
take a lot, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, to be fair, but in terms of they're all getting on Van Gaal's back. We've had it in the past with Warnock. Warnock's been the only manager who's consistently not been scared to bring young players in, and for that he deserves an enormous amount of credit. But Warnock knows, as everybody said, as a commentator on United Arsenal game said on Sunday, this is a free game for United with all the kids, because the fans are not going to have a go at them.
Yeah, exactly.
And the fans are so excited by them, and that.
I think it's very clever management from Van Gaal. That guy's not stupid. He may look a little weird when he falls over at the side of the pitch.
Yeah, that was
good. But then again, going back to the Palace argument, it is, and we pride ourselves on youth and bringing youth through. You know, watching Nathaniel Clyne on Sunday in the League Cup final, I actually felt proud, even though he lost, but I felt proud. He was a Palace player.
South London and proud.
South London and proud, all the time. That's what we are.
Yeah.
We don't see, and I think Kev's right, and I don't think we need to wait till we're safe. Let's just get this going. Yeah, let's get this moving. We're not going to go down, really, are we?
You bring someone like Boateng in, and the older players show more responsibility then, because they want to look after him, they want to show him what it's all about. And I think it's a no-lose situation, unless we lose, obviously. I genuinely thought after the Swansea game that he would be playing more of a role. And if there is an issue there, and there is, then why not try it?
Mm. Yeah. Well, Kai, he and Kai are the two that...
Kai's injured.
He's gone back on loan.
To Shrewsbury.
But they're the two that I think that the management are looking at and are really confident about. And they're in two positions that we arguably need supporting.
We need cover, don't we? That's what we need. Yeah, backup. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just we haven't really spoken about the West Brom game, and I'd like to think that maybe in a month's time or so we'll look back at this run and thought that it changed at half time at the West Brom game. I know we lost the game, but to come back and show a spirited second half and get a couple of goals in, and I think if the game had gone another 10 minutes, we may have got there. Maybe it felt after 25 minutes against West Brom, it was the lowest point of the whole season.
Yeah.
It really felt like this, even though, perspective, if you'd have said at the beginning of the season, 5 years ago when in administration, we know all these arguments, but let's just not look at it like that.
Like the Southampton game.
It felt like 20 years, minutes into that game, we're 3-0 down at West Brom. I'm thinking, can it get any worse?
Yeah.
No, could have been 5 at half time.
It could have been 5 at half time, but you know what? It didn't. We pulled it back. I walked away from that game thinking as though we'd got a draw or a victory.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually felt empowered by it, you know, in a mad way. And I think we got a little bit of that last night as well.
Yeah.
So let's hope on Sunday, we'll talk about this later, but let's hope this is going to carry on. I'd like to think that half time, that 25 minute mark at West Brom is a turning point in this little...
So what?
I think we saw last night as well, and I know it was disappointing, the last minute goal virtually, but when I left the house last night, we were 1-0 down and I was quite miserable. So for me that was a point, that's definitely a point gained last night. And again, two games running, and I just didn't see that West Brom half time. I didn't see that coming at all, and I think we all thought after Tottenham, we talked about West Brom, it was a perfect time to play them with the coin throwing and Pulis after a new contract, etc. But we got that totally wrong, as we have done in the past. But I simply didn't see that.
I think anyone saw that coming.
But the response, as James said, the response was, you know, either we were going to get battered or we restored some pride. But we did more than restore some pride. We came out and were a better side in the second half. Against a team, let's not forget, that conceded very few goals, West Brom, especially at home. Mm-hmm. And last night, my big fear at half-time, 1-0 down, is that Sunderland do concede goals. They always concede goals. And I just thought, Christ, if we can't score against Sunderland in the second half, that's going to be it. But not only did we score twice, and both good goals, well-taken goals, but we were much the better side in the second half. So it's not a team in... There's not a crisis there if a team can respond like that. The trouble is, it shouldn't have to respond like that.
Yeah.
And but it's just, again, it's an indication of... not everything clicking at the same time. You have one good half, one bad half.
Yeah, I agree.
You've got three or four players playing out of their skin and three or four players not. But and it will click. And I think Pardew looked very... He looked slightly haggard at the moment. He looked a really relieved man last night after the second half. And that the equalising goal was what it was. It wasn't. It was just a really... Sometimes you can't do anything about a really good goal. It's like Lee's goal against... I mean, the only good thing last night was that, you know... Nobody got injured celebrating goals, which I'm still so cross about. But sometimes it's like Stoke couldn't do anything about Leeds' goal against them.
Yeah.
And sometimes somebody scores a really good goal against
them. Hang on, before we talk about Hennessy,
yeah, I know, but
just one thing. Does it feel a bit like, as well, when you're on a bad run, luck doesn't go your way? Should have had two penalties at West Brom.
Yeah, probably should have had a penalty last night. Yeah, we should have done, but...
Things aren't really sort of... A bit unlucky as well.
It always feels like that when you're not...
But we shouldn't have been 3-0 down, basically. Those two penalty incidents, and they were penalties, and there's no doubt about it. But if we'd been 2-0 up, they wouldn't even have shown them on match today. It's like you'd shrug them off. And it's not the referee's fault that we were 3-0 down. And but these things will. You know, there's a Stoke fan pointing that to me. The Lee's goal, the corner that came from, wasn't a corner. It's like, fair
enough.
No.
Oh,
don't so, fair, I don't remember, but they do. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not just penalties. And to be fair, the goal we went 2-1 ahead last night, a lot of referees would have given a free kick against Dan because he bundled into the back of their centre-back.
So,
you know, at the end of the season, I think we'll talk about Hennessy later, and at the end of the season you could arguably talk about Hennessy costing us points. But in the final analysis, the referees... But that luck thing will change. We'll get a penalty that we don't deserve. Somebody will get sent off.
And also, everything went our way in the first half of the season, didn't it? We were flying high so much and probably overperforming.
We weren't talking about refs.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I don't... Just without Streety here to say reverting to the mean, because we've reverted far. I think possibly we were performing better than... Our results were better than we were as a team in the first half of the season, and our results are worse than we are as a team at the moment. I think we're probably a 10th place. We're still, as Pardew was quick to point out last night, we've still got more points now than we had this time last season.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Okay, wow. I didn't know that.
We're ahead.
What did we end on last season?
We ended up, well, we had a
45,
good,
was it?
And also, remember at the end of last season, we had a really worrying run until we beat...
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
And then we went on that run of... Seven or eight.
So we're ahead of ourselves points-wise from last season. And when you think about how bad our run is, we're still 14th. That's an indication of how good
it is. Well, we're still closer to 7th than we are to relegation.
And so that's an indication of how well we did... We were behind Tottenham on goal difference going into the Christmas matches. And so we built up that bank of points. So, as I say, arguably those results were better than we were, and these results are worse. But we don't look like a team in crisis. But we do know that next season there are changes
afoot
to be made.
I'm sure there will be.
The squad needs to be stronger. We know that there are arguably two of the back four. I don't know.
Well, speaking of changes, a lot of people last night on Twitter were going a bit crazy about Wayne Hennessy, calling for him to be dropped. I personally think he couldn't do anything with either goal.
Well, a lot of Palace fans didn't seem to have noticed the deflection for the first goal, because a lot of them were saying, oh, there he's all his weight on his left side again. Yes, because that's where the ball was going.
And he would have got it.
And that's
it was a deflection. It was not his fault.
And the second goal... I hadn't seen the second goal. I'd seen the tweets before I'd seen the second goal. So I was expecting to see, when I saw the highlights, I was expecting to see him beaten at the near post. But it was a really good goal.
Yeah.
That wasn't his fault. You could talk about maybe midfield cover and fullback. But that wasn't his goal. And the fact is, we've been as harsh as anybody on Hennessy in this pod. And of course, you want to blame people, but don't blame him for last night. He didn't.
But that's, I think you've said it there, Kev. I think you look at that second goal last night, and yes, there would have been some goalkeepers that would have saved that.
It wouldn't be
playing
for Palace, though.
But the point is that Palace fans, we're looking for a scapegoat. We are.
Yeah,
we are. And I think Hennessy, unfortunately, like it or don't like it, he's filling that role at the moment.
But Berini had...
Because of a few mistakes.
Yeah, Berini had nowhere to go last night. Hennessy made a point of covering his near post. Berini, defensively, we were actually all right. We'd recovered quite well. There was no one for Berini to pass to. So he went, he hit it beautifully. Mm. And there's no blame at all for Hennessy.
It feels to me a little bit like there's a with some fans, there's a bit of a campaign against Hennessy that they're looking just for a reason to hammer him, regardless of how he plays. And yeah, he's made mistakes this season, yes, and he's cost us points.
There's been reasons to hammer him, yeah.
He's had an okay game and he's not at fault, I think it's really unfair to have a go at him when there's been far worse players on the pitch, namely Kabay and Joel Ward.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And actually, Hennessy was... And everything else he was asked to do last night, shots-wise, he did absolutely fine.
Also, I think, as James said, I don't know if it was just before we came on air, but that can't have been, because that would have been 5 o'clock this morning. But
we were still out.
All the talk last night, all the interviews with the managers, all the journalists, no one said Hennessy was at fault because Hennessy had done, but everyone said what a brilliant goal.
Exactly. Mm. It's only the Palace fans that are, some Palace fans.
Fine, kick him when he deserves to be kicked.
And also, Speroni isn't saving that. And if Speroni lets that goal in, no one is saying, his footwork there isn't good enough.
And also, the thing is, Hennessy's not being dropped. You can tweet as much as you like, Hennessy's not being dropped. I don't think for a moment Hennessy will be our first choice goalkeeper next season, but for the rest of the season he's not being dropped, so we need to deal with it, and the fact is he's a Premier League goalkeeper. He's not top quality Premier League goalkeeper, but he's a decent keeper, and yes, he has made mistakes, but he's also made some really brilliant saves. So
he's no better or worse. I feel like McCarthy and Speroni and Hennessy are all much of a muchness, to be honest. I don't really think there's a lot between them.
Also, those fans were saying put Speroni back. If Hennessy's dropped, it won't be Speroni who goes back.
Yeah, exactly.
Simple as that. It's Pardew doesn't think he's tall enough, full stop.
Right.
So, as we know, Pardew's an alpha male. Once he's made his mind up, he's made his mind up.
I think it's unfair as well. I think absolutely fair enough. When Hennessy makes game-changing mistakes, like Villa away, like Man City away, fair enough. You hammer him, or you at least pick them out. But on the same flip side, you have to then give him praise, or at least be fair when he has a perfectly competent performance.
Or to be even more fair, not blame him when it's not his fault.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And Ward hasn't played well. Despite me being one of those people who said after the Tottenham game, well, that's it, we've worked out the formula of two fullbacks and fullback defending, but I don't think there's any doubt that Suárez will go straight back in the team
I think that's harsh on Kelly personally. I think he's been
well. I think it is, but I think he'll want to put Ward back where he's comfortable, and I think Suárez with Bolasie, how we pronounce it in this house. I think Suárez with Bolasie was a combination that for the most part worked really well, and I think Pardew will be keen. I mean, Pardew will be very keen to get back to as near as possible as his first choice starting 11. Albeit MacArthur won't be starting, but I think I'll be amazed if his Suárez doesn't revert to left back with Ward.
We talked last week about,
or possibly Kelly at right back.
Well, you could argue that Kelly has done more to earn the right back spot than Joe Ward has over the last few weeks, really.
Possibly, yeah.
It's
yeah.
always been quite possibly, reliable.
I think there is an argument there. I think the problem is if Kelly plays with Suárez, and we did notice it earlier in the season when Ward was out for a couple of games, it's so unbalanced at the back because Suárez does bomb forward. Mm. You almost need both fullbacks going forward, so everyone goes forward with them. But when Kelly doesn't and Suárez does, you've got a massive sort of diagonal space going from one side to the other. I suspect that Ward will go back to right back. I just think because we talk about Pardew being stubborn, Pardew knows what his first 11 is, and I think the back four is.
And that's
is
it. I think that might be as well because Kelly is centre back, really, isn't he, by his very nature? So he wants to be more defensive.
That, but he's 25 odd now, and he's no one seems that keen to play him at centre back.
Never seems to play him.
Yeah, and there have been times this season when you think, all right, give him a run out. But I just think as well, looking at Liverpool. Much more suspect. Liverpool are good going forward, but not so at the back. And I just think he'll probably try and go toe to toe with Liverpool. and hope that they're slightly nervous about coming to Sellers Park as usual, and then we can get at them. And I think if you've got, you know, some of Soare and Belasse, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say that. It's like water.
Soare, Belasse, mayonnaise.
It's like, so I can't say water rat. Like, I can't say water. I can say water and then rat, but I can't say water the two
rat.
Words together.
Water rat.
It's hard, isn't it? But I think some of their interplay together was fantastic. And defensively, Soare, we were praising him quite a lot first half of the season. Yeah, we were saying he was better than we thought he was. And it's just, I think, with Belasse being missing, that he's looked. And I think that was an issue we talked about because Pardew simply couldn't find the right person to play in front of him.
Yeah.
It was like Lee at Swansea wasn't. Before that, it looked like it might be the answer, and then clearly wasn't. And then other options weren't quite.
So Belasse's return really has actually been fruitful, not just for the forward players, but also for when Soare's back. Yeah, he really has balance,
isn't
he?
I think. If we pick up a few points between now and the end of the season, I think Belasse is going to be player of the year, and that'll be slightly odd from someone who's missed half a season. But
he shows his importance.
Well, he's put, at the very least, he's put £5 million on his transfer fee.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
but it shows his importance all over the pitch, and I think not just defensively, as we'll see, but I think the really significant thing is that it might be coincidence because we're not fully qualified. We're only pub coaches, aren't we? Very good, fully qualified. We're fully qualified pub coaches, but yeah, we've got all our badges.
Oh,
we worked our way up from some really shit pubs. But it was Belasse's ball into Wickham last time. I just think Belasse's making Wickham already the second half at West Brom.
Yeah.
Second half, and certainly second half last night. Belasse's bringing things out of Wickham. I think the three of them, especially with Sakho to come back as well, because there's talk about Zahar being 50-50 for last night, but I think just two wide men and Wickham is looking like a combination that's going to work. And that's,
Sakho did come on last night for a little bit.
Yeah, a bit at the end.
I think that's the, Wickham's goals are the big, the big plus.
Good. Well, let's end on a big plus. That's a good point to end part one on.
Fantastic.
Positive. Very positive. Yeah. In part two, we're going to be answering questions from our listeners. So join us in a it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Join us in a bit. Welcome back to this week's 5-Year Plan Podcast.
Hey.
Pod 171, sponsored by Vector Printing. For all your print and embroidery needs, go to vector.co.uk, and that's Vector with a
K. Hey.
And JCIS, the global research and brand consultancy from South London. Visit jc-is.com.
I will.
Very good. Right, it's question time from our listeners. We've had loads of questions this week. I'm not going to get to read them all out, so apologies for that, but I've handpicked a few. And the first one...
Handpicked.
Ooh, wow.
They're like strawberries.
Yeah.
Just like strawberries.
How would you have picked them otherwise?
I don't know. Brain-picked?
No, not with you. Handpicked.
Right. First one is from David Fraser.
Hi, David.
And he says, Pardew has made half-time subs in 14 of 34 games this season.
Wow.
Is that an admission that he gets his lineups wrong?
Or maybe it's an admission that he wants. He's not afraid to change things.
Yeah, he's kind of. I think managers can't win in that situation because we complain both times, don't we? If he doesn't make changes, we say he's got no plan B, and if he does, we say, "What's he doing? Why isn't he starting?" Some of them were going to be players that started and possibly shouldn't have done because of injuries. Some of them will be tactical. Some of them will be because we're 1-0 down. But so many of them at half time is a good stat. That's quite unusual because normally
I would like to see that stat broken down a little bit.
Yeah,
the reasons why.
Yeah, you sound like Streety, but that is a good stat. There were some people complaining because he took Wickham off last night, didn't he?
Yeah, well, actually, that was one of our. The next question actually was relating to the Wickham one because he brought Adebayor in, didn't he, for Wickham for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah,
And Nicholas Deval.
Hi, Nicholas.
Hi, Nick.
Said why. Wickham was on a good thing last night. Why take him off? Could he have scored again and put the game to bed? That's a valid question, isn't it?
Well, it is a valid question, but it's also Adebayor's more experienced. He's not playing at his old home ground, charging about, holds the ball up better. I think defensively, Adebayor is strong. So I don't think that was a decision that you'd go. That's an astonishingly...
Maybe it's one in hindsight that you think. Oh,
maybe that's easy, at the time Wickham had. Yeah, Wickham's still working his way back from being out for half a season with injury.
I think there's also the thing as well that maybe Adebayo might have just nicked the winner himself.
Yeah.
You know, it was there set for him, wasn't it?
To give them a new problem. And also, possibly, because he thought he might bypass the midfield a little bit more by just banging it long to Adebayo. So I don't think that was a... certainly wasn't a game-changing decision. I thought that was perfectly logical, to be perfect.
And going back to the half-time subs, I would interpret that as a manager that is prepared to make big calls earlier in games when things aren't possibly working, which I would say is possibly a positive thing.
Yeah, you can. You could. Yeah, I mean, like you say, it depends whether you're for or anti-Pardew.
I think if you look at social media, especially last night, everybody's moaning that Pardew has, not only does he not have a plan B, more often than not, he doesn't have a plan A.
Yeah.
So, you know, that saying that goes against what a lot of people are saying. So I guess it's what Kev says. You know, if you're pro-Pardew, it's a good move. If you're anti-Pardew, he's an idiot.
This is the same. This is the same Pardew that got... You have to look at it dispassionately, which is hard, but it's the same Pardew that got us to fifth in the Premier League. It's the same Pardew we all wanted as manager. And he is the best manager we've had in the Premier League, and hopefully will be for the next two or three years. But, yeah, you know, he hasn't done things. But the thing with changing with substitute is it's been... I think we have underestimated the injuries sometimes. And it's only recently that, to his credit, Pardew has started talking about the injuries. He's rarely had the chance in the second half of the season to pick his first choice 11. Mm. So I think the substitutions, I'd be interested to see how many of those were made after Bolasie was injured.
Yeah.
Because I think since then he has been floundering, if you're not a Pardew fan, floundering around looking for the right starting 11 with the players that he's got.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's also having to cope with the fact that some players are clearly out of form and are not undroppable, but are... harder to drop than others. So,
and the teams that have done well this season, you know, Leicester up top, Spurs as well, have had fairly regular starting 11.
Yes, well, we have had Leicester have barely. I mean, they've played an unchanged team so many times. I think Pardew would do that as well if he had the opportunity. But Pardew's not one of those managers. Well, ironically, that was Ranieri's reputation. But by all accounts, the players told him to keep out of it at the start of the season.
Did they?
Yeah, that's it. By his own admission, he says, "I haven't done a lot." They picked the first team, and they've been really lucky with injuries and suspensions, because they are one of those teams that referees seem to get away with rotational fouls.
Rotational fouls.
I think I don't think Pardew, he's not a manager that's lost. He's not like Remy Gard, just desperately throwing all the cards up and see where they land, basically. Yeah. So,
we had quite a few questions about Pardew this week, and Christopher. Well, Christopher Gillet, it looks like.
Obviously a friend of Kev's.
Or Bolasie, Gillet, as we call him. It's a great name, right, Christopher?
Yeah, what a great name. Well, G-I-L-L-E-T-T.
Gillet.
Oh, okay. I'm going to call it Gillet.
Where are you from?
Well, now he's in Chesham. He is Gillet.
Chesham. Chesham.
Right. He says, do you agree there seems to be a lack of urgency at the club? I'm sure it wouldn't be professional or maybe counterproductive, but I'd like to see Pardew lose his rag about this run a bit more. Is there an indication that he's laid into the players?
I do absolutely agree with that. I think that's a really insightful question, and it's something we have talked about before. Pardew's attitude on the touchline, I think it's well known that we think he's after the England job and that he thinks he should calm down a little bit, and I think that is counterproductive. But I do think we've slipped. I think the transfer window indicates that there was nobody at the club who had the foresight to think that if this bad run continues, there might be a genuine problem. And I think we have sleepwalked into it.
I think that's a good expression. We have sleepwalked into it.
And I think we've told ourselves that we're a good club and we've got too many points to go down, which is probably true. And I think it's only this week, and you see Pardew's expression in interviews, especially the one in the Standard, saying, "I've had to kick the players up the arse. We've all been a bit complacent, if you prefer to sleepwalk." But yes, I think we have been.
I don't think there has been
a lack of urgency.
I don't think he needs to go into the press though to do those things. I mean, you look. On the opposite side of the coin, you look at someone like Klopp. You know, who's well known for his touchline antics and his expressionless faces. But if you're a player and you're looking around and you're seeing your manager doing that, you're going to play. Yeah. And you notice whenever Liverpool do score, the first person they run to is always Klopp. Yeah. And he's always there with them. There's that unity, and I think that's something that we are missing.
We said that about Pulis, didn't we?
Well, that's one of the things I like about Pulis. Pulis is non-stop on the touchline. Pulis is non-stop at getting at referees. it's non-stop. He was writing notes all the time. Yeah. He was shouting. He was directing. He used to conduct Balassi like an orchestra. He was always telling Balassi where to go. And so Pardew used to be like that as well.
But he did. Pardew, he used to be like that. Pardew, he just seemed to calm down a little bit.
Well, calm down to the point of looking lacklustre on the bench. And you look at the Bournemouth game with Eddie Howe.
He looks a bit lost though, doesn't he?
A little bit. And you look at the Bournemouth game when Eddie Howe, who I don't like, was just he's all over the place. His arms waving and. People within football will probably say, well, that's just wasted energy. But it does transmit to the players. And
it transmits to the fans.
It transmits to the fans. Yeah. And it raises the game. It raises the energy. Pulis is really good at that sort of thing. Yeah. Klopp's very good at that sort of thing. There's a lot of being touched, apparently, Klopp, by post-match interviewing.
I've seen that a couple of times.
It'd be interesting to see what happens. I know we're going to talk about the game on Sunday later on. But, there are two sides to this coin. That you've got Pardew's being the way he is and Klopp's the way he is.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll hopefully be a cauldron of fire on Sunday. So let's see what happens.
I think the urgency has come back. I think quite clear the last two games, certainly second half performance, that there is a realisation what's happened. I think Steve Parrish will be pointing out that this is the season you can't go down because you're going to miss out so much. Also, I think what James just said there is a really good point. I think the fans, to a degree, have only just begun to wake up to the fact that we're on the fringes of relegation.
Yeah, fight, absolutely.
Which is why I think on Sunday, and we talked about this jokingly earlier on in the season, before Christmas and just after, that perhaps we need to lose a few games and get the passion back. But I think, but we didn't mean
a few.
Because it's almost been getting like an interesting social experiment to see how many games we could lose
before we realise.
Before we realise, yeah. But I think on Sunday, I suspect we're playing a team that's become a big deal, big rivalry. Again, that's why it's on telly. I think the atmosphere will be there, and I think the whole thing will be lifted. But I think we have drifted into this, and I think that's partly because we lost five or six games and we were still ahead of Liverpool, we're still ahead of Chelsea. We all looked at the league table and went, that's fine,
we're all right.
Other teams will keep losing, and now it's only now that we suddenly, it's almost, and I think we will do it, it's almost like Mo Farah, whose lead gets down to 2 yards before he looks around and goes, oh crikey, I need to kick on here. And I think we will. I simply can't. I think we've got enough of a lead with the goal difference we've got.
It's very typically Palace, isn't it, Kev? A lot of people were saying on social media last night.
Do you know what the other thing is?
This is just so Palace.
Do you know what? There is a certain amount of perverse pride in that.
No, absolutely.
In that there is. It's like my dad said last night, rather bizarrely, since he phoned up for the score, I can't get Al Jazeera on the telly, Kev. It's like, there are plenty of other ways of finding out the score, Dad. But he said, they can't make it easy, can they, Palace? They have to do it. It's like, West Ham fans are enjoying their lovely run, but it's not. It is the Palace way. It is the way that you have to make things difficult. But I think we have got enough points to stay up already.
Yeah.
And I can't see us not picking up
More
points, even Norwich and Newcastle to come. I know everyone's saying, oh, we got Liverpool, Man United to come, but then after that, Newcastle, Norwich, Stoke, Southampton, Everton.
I think it'd be very Palace to go through this 11 game non-winning run and then beat Liverpool.
It would be. But I've got, as I said last night, I'm really genuinely. I don't know why particularly, but it feels like a weight. So I was doing that thing yesterday where you start to go, just at the back of your mind, you go, it's just playing against different football teams, that's all. It's like, that's fine. There's plenty of grounds I haven't been to in the Championship.
Yeah,
we won't be on telly as much, but you can relax. But
cheaper tickets.
And of course, the front of your mind, you go, no. Don't even think about it. But and then you do start to do that thing where you kind of double tempting fate and going, right, hang on, I'll try having this cup of tea before a game. Yeah. I'll try not having a glass of wine before the night before a game. And then you think, and you have to have a talk to yourself. You go, it's not down to you, is it? Because that's really arrogant to think it's down
actually,
to you.
Actually, my dad actually texted me with a question for you, which is about the pod music. So we've changed the pod music, then we changed it back. So it's currently back to the old one.
Why did we change it?
We changed it back a couple of weeks ago because you moaned about it, and then we lost at home to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
So I think my dad's question was, are you willing to accept that the pod music has absolutely nothing to do with it, and can go back to the other one?
Of course he's not.
I'm not willing to rule anything in or anything out. We don't know what combination of pod music. It could be that you dropped the pod music game too early. I don't know.
Come on.
Could be our game. Look, that little beautiful little cat who just came in from the garden looking bemused. Could mean that I gave her the wrong type of cat food the night before we lost the first game. Who knows? I'm not.
Shame. I like any pod music, so.
I don't listen to it. You can change it every week, as far as I'm concerned. I'm slightly
just
worried.
Just don't tell him.
Maybe we'll change it every week.
Just don't tell him because he doesn't listen anyway.
I'm slightly worried that your dad's heard more of the pod than I have. I'm not going to agree with anything your dad says, am I?
No, of course not.
He's the man.
He is the man.
He's the man.
He's the Don.
Yeah.
Right. The Don.
Don Daly. We've got around these parts.
Right. The next question is from
Miles. He reads his dad's own question out, look.
Yeah.
He's loads from, of questions.
Yeah, so it's for the top of his head as well.
That's actually the first time I've ever read a question out from my dad in 171 pods, I think.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though he
pays favouritism.
Yeah.
Right. The next question is from Miles Loden.
Hi, Miles.
He says, how much of responsibility should Pards take for our current run? Has he been naive or arrogant to stick to a style of football that allows us to be open rather than keep it tight, build on draws until we have the squad to play a more expansive style of football?
Good question.
Good question.
I do think Pardew should be taking some of the blame, as he alluded to in that interview earlier on this week. But, you know, as we mentioned in the answer to the last question, you know, I think you can start by doing it by looking as though you're getting a little bit more involved. And, you know, yes, I think he should take some of the blame. You know, and as Newcastle fans and Southampton fans and Charlton fans will point out, this is what Pardew does, you know.
Yeah.
I was getting a lot of tweets last night during the game from Newcastle fans, not gloating at it and saying to how they were all, you know, but you know, saying, this is what happens. This is what happens, you know. This is what he does.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lack of.
There's a really good article. Did you see the article on FYP? And yes, self promotion. Jamie Smith, the Newcastle.
Yeah, really. I thought that was really good. Yeah.
Picking apart sort of his run at Newcastle.
I thought it was really good.
And there was a lot of similarities.
I thought that was very good. And that's opened my mind a little bit too. Mm. And this guy last night on Twitter was talking about the same sort of thing. So, yes, I do think Pardew has got to take some of the blame.
They got out of that run, though, Newcastle, didn't they, in the end? Didn't go down, did they?
No,
I didn't. They never went down under Pardew. So
I don't, you know, and because you know, I think we built up so many points as we keep saying.
I think Pardew. The thing with Pardew is he's very quick to take the credit when we do well.
Yeah,
even though sometimes it's not necessarily because of things he's done. So yeah, of course he has to take some of the blame. That's the nature of the managership. The style of football is a really interesting one, though, because he's not a Pulis type manager. He never has been, and I mean we're and let's not forget how well we were doing defensively until the Tottenham game, really, or the Chelsea and Tottenham games.
Yeah.
It was we were amazed that we'd let three goals in. As we were, even though, to be fair, the defence hasn't been playing as well, we're still amazed to be 3-0 down at West Brom.
Yeah.
So the defence was really good, and that's partly down to the midfield. We're not, but yes, there is that element. Pardew's always said he'd rather win.
Yes,
and draw, and there is.
He always said that
there are games that certainly, you know, Bournemouth, Watford, you go, no, we'll batten down the hatches, which we would have done under Pulis.
Yeah.
But having said that, the fans take a little bit of the blame for that as well, because you know, as you can see, West Brom fans now, their first half against us was a one off. West Brom fans have been moaning about the style of football all season. If Pardew had done that and carried on doing that, we'd be moaning about that style of football as well. So it's kind of, we were all pleased that we were playing a bit more expansive football.
And he did say when he came in, didn't he?
He did.
We're going to be more expensive. We're going to lose some games.
And he said
we'll concede
goals. So yeah, we.
But that doesn't excuse the fact that you're going on an 11 game winless run
or that first half at West Brom.
Yeah,
no, it doesn't. But also, as you said, that first half at West Brom, the game at Villa, out of 11 games, there were only like 2 hours or 2.5-3 hours in which we were really, really bad. The rest, you could argue, second half at Watford, we were the better side. Mm. Bournemouth, we didn't play particularly well, but we could easily have nicked it. It's not like we're not Villa. It's just a certain set of circumstances.
Maybe that adds more to the frustration.
Yeah, it does. And remember, we didn't lose. We hadn't lost all those games. If we're counting the bad run from Bournemouth and Swansea, there were points were picked up. And we're not. And it does add to the frustration because we're a better team than we thought. But also bear in mind that we were short of players at that time. So yes, it is. The bottom line is always the manager's fault. Way football.
Well,
works.
You know, I don't know. I tend to.
It's always the manager that will take the blame. Yeah.
After a run that we've had, I think you can look at all aspects of the club without being too dramatic. Mm-hmm. You know, from the fans through the players to the manager, I think we've all got to harbour a little bit of blame.
Yes, but also
us as well.
The pod as well.
The pressure
we put on.
Whoa!
Changing the music.
Hosedale Online, definitely.
Yeah.
But also the other thing is you don't know what Pardew does on the training ground and the dressing room. You don't know how much he's done to keep morale up when the, you know, you don't. Yeah. It's possible that under a different manager or a lesser manager, we would have lost all those games by a bigger margin and our confidence would be completely shot.
We do hear constantly from inside the club that they are very close and tight knit, and the atmosphere is still good despite the run.
Yeah, and don't forget the cup run. And you know, as I've said before, the second half performance in the last two games indicates they're not a squad in crisis. Exactly. So, you know.
Okay, next question is from Russell Levy.
Hi, Russell.
He says, do you know where I can get some pills which will make the rest of the season more bearable?
Yeah, I do. They're really good, actually. Yeah. And I can, if we order a job lot, I'll get them quite cheap.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. The other option is we know we can get some pills that will knock you out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, maybe.
Just wake you up with the good news or bad news. But
speaking of end of the season then, Jack Pierce.
Hi, Jack.
Says, if you were Didier Deschamps, would you take Johan to the Euros? And if you were Roy Hodgson, would you take Wilf?
No, probably.
I think,
I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think, do you know, I wonder whether Kabay, the last few games, has had an indication from Didier Deschamps that he's not going to the Euros.
Good point.
Because one of the reasons he's...
Do you know something we don't know, Kev?
No, I don't. But okay. I just one of the reasons...
That's a very good...
But one of the reasons...
It could answer a lot of questions.
It could do, because one of the reasons that he was so keen to come to Premier League football was A, to get really, really fit, and was to get noticed, and I think, and to get in the France team. And I wonder whether he's been, or he thinks himself that's not going to happen. Wilf, a fully firing Wilf, I would say absolutely, but I think, actually, maybe the answer to that question I should change to is I would, but he won't.
Yeah,
if you see what I mean.
Right.
Well, Wolf, like, with Yannick's absence, Wolf has stepped up, hasn't he?
The problem is, and we've said this before, he's stepped up, but no one's noticed because he's stepped up in a team that's been struggling.
Yeah.
And the fact is as well that I think from Hodgson's point of view, Wolf's got a lot of attitude problems that he needs to rectify, which apparently I think he has done.
Mm.
But Hodgson doesn't. No, I don't think Hodgson will take the risk with him. I think as a wild card, I think Zaha's a really good. Really
but
good.
Wilf, and, yeah, Wilf is exciting and frustrating within the space of 2 or 3 minutes every game.
I was watching the
game last night on some dodgy stream, and you know, and there were bits there. I was just like, yeah, go on, Wilf, yes. Yeah. At the same time, something that's so naive.
Yeah.
And I was saying to my son Travis, you know, who's been on the pod before, I was saying, how naive. And he just looked at me and said, Dad, he's played over 200 games. Yeah. You're not naive when you played over 200 games.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And he's true. You know, we often give this, you know, we say this about Wilf. He's young. No, you know. And I think he's got it in him. There was some bits last night where he's going past players.
Mm.
It's just that final bit. It's always that final little bit. Mm. But anyway, saying that, he's still exciting. But no, I don't think.
I think he's earned a call up in the last season.
Yeah.
Bear in mind who else has been called up to friendlies in the last year.
Yeah,
or so.
Yeah. No,
he's earned that, definitely.
Yeah.
Whether that translates to going to the Euros is a different matter.
But I mean, it would be lovely to see Wilf given a chance in a team that's got Harry Kane in it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think the other problem with Wilf is that he's not. I don't think Hodgson would see him as an impact sub. Whereas, you know, if Bolasie was English, he'd be in the squad without a doubt.
Yeah.
And you'd have him, wouldn't start, but you'd have him on the bench.
Yeah.
If you're 1-0 down, you'd bring Bolasie on for the last 20 minutes. I don't think football sees Wilf as a game-changing player like that.
When you've got a player like Ali who's around now, who's obviously going to.
And also, I think in a way, Wilf has sort of suffered a little bit from the responsibility he has taken on.
Mm.
Which he has done. He's been much more responsible defensively.
Yeah, no, he has.
And that, of course, doesn't showcase what the reason he would be picked for the England team. He's not the flying winger that he. You know, the West Brom. If Hodgson was at the West Brom game earlier in the season, at the home game, and if Wilf had played like that every week, then you'd say, yeah, of course he would be, but he wasn't, and he hasn't.
No.
So, but I still think there's a potential England career.
Cause allowing
for the fact he has played that many games, he's still a young.
He's still very young.
He's still young.
No, he's
not even that yet.
Definitely got a chance.
So he's still. Yeah.
Okay. Last couple of questions then. Okay. This one's from Wayne Hart Loveless.
Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Wayne Hart Loveless.
Jedi.
Yes.
Can't pass.
The answer is no.
Can't tackle.
Yeah.
Can't run. Mm-hmm. And can't track.
Yeah.
But can head the ball and foul.
Yes.
What does he bring to the team?
Well, pretty much the second, the last two things you mentioned. I
worry now. Whenever the ball goes to Jedi, I worry.
He's still giving it away, isn't he? 3 years later, still giving it away.
Yeah.
But he has got someone who came on at the top. There's something indefinable. There's something there. If you keep the ball away from him, you know what I mean. But he's
got a very nice beard now. His beard's getting Joe Ledley length as well, so that's impressive.
The other players clearly like him. He's got a presence. He's got a presence about him.
Captain again last night.
He's captain again last night. He's still really good. Without the ball, he's a really good player. Still, he still can break up.
Yeah, he can still break up.
And he's still, his tackling isn't as bad, but he knew exactly. He was a perfect Pulis player. He knew exactly what he had to do under Pulis.
Yeah. Mm.
And under Pulis, he had to break up other teams' attack. Certainly that run against Bournemouth when he galumphed down the right, he wouldn't have done that against Pulis. Pulis would have walked on the pitch and
dragged him,
smacked him on the knees with a ruler and told him. But he knew exactly what his job was under Pulis.
So is he not a Pardew player?
I don't think he is. No, I don't think. I think
probably not.
We talked about this. There are indications when Pardew first came in and Jedi was away, and then he got sent off against West Ham. And indications were that Pardew thought he slowed everything down. And I think he does for Pardew because Pardew wants the ball moved quicker. And I think he knew what he was doing on the Pulis. His job was to break up play and give the ball straight away to somebody who could do something with it. Albeit quite a lot of time, that was knocking it back to Delaney, who did what he was told to do and hit that crossfield ball. But Jedinak, the thing is, Jedinak's always been better than he actually is in terms of, it took Jedinak a year to get used to the pace of the Championship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we went up in the playoffs, he was one of those players, none of us, I don't think, expected him to play in the Premier League.
No.
So I actually think he's overachieved. And also, he's still captain of his country, and his country's not 200th in the rankings. His country's a proper football inside.
Yeah, they're doing well, aren't they?
So there is something there.
But then again, let's be honest, if he hasn't done it, it's been 14 months since he was away in the Asian Cup. And then he got sent off against West Ham. Under Pardew, he's never really done anything. No. So, you know, as a Man City fan said to me the other day, who was bemoaning the fact that Pellegrino had not picked Joe Hart, saying there's no room for sentiment in modern football, which, of course, I laughed about later on. I think we could say the same about Jedi. It's just like, you know, he said, yeah, okay. I think he proved last night there's not a lot going on there at the moment, you know. And we all love Jedi. We love what he's done. He's overachieved. He'll always be a Palace player at heart, and you know, but go to China, make yourself some money, mate, because it's a lot closer to home, and let's move on. I think that's it, you know. I think, you know, and a nice shake of the hand.
Sadly, go with our blessing.
Sadly,
go with our blessing.
It's been 14 months now.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. It's not coming back.
Thank you for the memories.
Yeah, thank you.
I think I'm probably his last.
And I will wipe the tear from my eyes, I say.
I think I'm probably his last defender on the pod, in that I don't panic as much as everybody else does. But the worrying thing for me is not so much how good Jedi is, but why is it he's keeping other people out of the, when you've got Ledley there, Boateng there, much in the past, much getting into, why suddenly is Jedi an option? Jedi shouldn't be an option anymore. But that it worries me a little bit that he isn't. I suspect if you were to talk to other professional footballers, say other, implying I'm one of them, but I suspect I suspect if you were to talk to professional footballers, they would have maybe a different opinion of him than we do.
I think
he clearly, in terms of leadership, as I say, the younger players, the other players still really like him. In terms of leadership, he clearly,
I think he has good stats as well. I think Jedi, even after last night's game, Travis was telling me, he said he had some of the best stats. Now, I don't know, because I don't read all the stats things. You know, and we know Alan Pardew likes his stats, and we know a lot of things are stat-led in the modern game. You watch the game, and I don't care what the stats are.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on there.
There's nothing, but for me,
he's just become a very average Premier League player. We need more than average. In that position, you need something a little bit more than average.
He won't be there next season. Well, that's the vital phrase, in that position, because, again, he looks like one of those players who under Pulis knew exactly what his position was, and now doesn't, because he's roaming much more than he used. It's like we all know he can't do that.
Yeah.
Just if that's what I'd say, just stick him in front of the back four. Just make him, if you want to make him the holding player, but he's not doing that. He's doing other stuff, because I suspect if he was just a holding midfield player, he hasn't got any pace. So don't cross the halfway line. Yeah. Just you know, if you want to talk about shutting up shop, keeping whatever it is when they're attacking, then let him do that. But it just seems that, and whether it's Pardew lack of guy, I don't know. It's not entirely Jedi's fault, I don't think, because I think, as I say, he has always overachieved. And again, like Hennessy, I suspect he's one of the players who just won't be there
next season.
And you know, God love
him. Hennessy, I think, will be there next season, to be fair.
Well, he may be there. I don't think he'll be first-choice goalkeeper.
It's going to be a very interesting summer, actually, I think.
It has to be interesting.
It could be interesting in the wrong way. But I think that sentiment thing is really interesting, because I think that the Championship team has to be broken up now to be perfect. And I hate to say this, I include Delaney in that as well.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Possibly Joel Ward.
Joel Ward as well. I think we've got to move on.
I think we've got ourselves in. I'm not going to say rut, because that sounds too negative. No. It's not a rut, and I don't want to be negative about this. Because I think we've got to, let's start addressing these problems before they become real problems. We can all see little glimmers of it.
And we're
still clinging on. We're still clinging on to this 5 years ago when Ely went out. Imagine if we said this beginning of the season, we'd be all right, wouldn't we? We're clinging on. Let's be realistic about this. Let's just move forward. Things have got to change, but let's do it in a positive way rather than doing it in a negative way. And I think that's the thing to do.
I'm probably the most sentimental.
And I'll get off my soapbox now.
I'm probably the most sentimental of all Palace fans here, in that I tend to cling, you know, as is the claret and blue kit. You earn things. Even I think we've also got to lose this attitude of, well, this team was good enough to keep us up two seasons running, this team's good enough to keep up three seasons running, therefore we only have to add a couple of bits and pieces. I personally think Bolasie, Zahar, Wickham, Dan, possibly Kabaye, possibly McArthur, the only players that you could say should definitely be there next season.
I think you're right.
Suarez possibly, but we need changes. We need a much stronger. We need players that aren't going to play regularly. We need better squad players, and we need a better starting 11. And it's
possible to achieve.
Yes, that's the thing.
In the past, it's not been possible. It's definitely possible.
And that
core
that you just said is a good. That's a good group of players.
That's a very good group of players.
Well, they are a good group of players anyway. If you keep Delaney in that, but you know, Delaney's not getting any younger, and that is a good group. It's really interesting as well. I don't know if you saw, there's a big article in the Standard with Parrish and Pardew. So they've expanded their foreign coaching staff by, I think they've doubled it. I think, and they're looking to do we've got permanent people in Africa. They're looking at Belgian, French football, looking to do what West Ham and other clubs have
done.
Yeah,
other Premier League teams
doing. And Leicester do, bring in players that unless you're Travis, we haven't heard of.
Yeah,
who turn out to be, because we genuinely really need, and again, I hate to say this because it should be all about flair, but we need a Kante. We need a player who's going to play every game, box to box, just break it. You barely notice what he does. He just breaks up. We really need that, because
McArthur has been that guy in the past.
He's not that. McArthur's more.
He's got elements of it.
Yeah, I like it.
But we need. Yeah, we do. But I'd like to see McArthur as a more creative player. But yeah, we need a genuinely creative player. We need somebody to provide goals and score goals from midfield.
I think
Wickham potentially could be the answer up front. It could be, and I think we're starting to find out why Pardew was so keen to bring him. Sentiments, it has to go. We need to change up.
We also need to change parts of the pod into part three, but before we do that, I've got one more question. And that is from Matt Philip Harris.
Hi Matt Philip Harris.
He says, if you could choose a family motto for Palace to get written under the crest on the shirt, what would it be?
Don't do that. That's what the Latin for the don't do that is. That would be the Palace family motto.
Don't get the motto.
No, just don't do that. Just don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that. God love them.
God love them.
Typical Palace.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
So Palace.
Yeah. So Palace.
Good. Right. So thank you very much for your questions, listeners. In part three, we're going to go back in this week, back in time for that. So join us in a bit. Welcome back to this week's 5-Year Plan podcast.
Hey,
sponsored by Vector Printing. For all your print and embroidery needs, go to vector.co.uk. And that's Vector with a
K.
Correct. And JCIS, the global research and brand consultancy from South London. Visit jc-is.com.
I will.
Oh, good. Very enthusiastic, that one. Right.
I am.
Good. It's time for In This Week, where we go back in time to look at some things that happened in Palace's history during this week. And
For the bloke in the portions, he keeps saying that we don't actually go back in time. Probably should change that, yes.
What do you mean? We don't obviously, physically.
Eventually go back in time.
We pick a book up and say, we check what happened.
We figuratively go back in time.
Yeah, well, we don't even do that.
JD picks up my book I've lent him.
Which is... only goes up to 2008 as well, so we miss out the last 8 years of Palace's history, where not a lot happened anyway, so it doesn't matter.
That's a good point, yeah.
Wednesday the 2nd of March.
It's the best acting I've ever seen in the world.
Wednesday 2nd of March 1977.
It's Wednesday. Oh, Wednesday. That's today's Wednesday.
Who made their debut for Palace in a 3-2 defeat away at Lincoln?
Jeff Bourne.
No. Went on to be one of Palace's best ever players.
No, Jeff Bourne. Kenny Sampson. Oh, no, Kenny Sampson's debut was at Grimsby. You talked about that the other day.
Winger.
Vince Hillier.
Made his debut for Palace, 2nd of March 1977.
He was...
Wow.
He wouldn't get near a football team now because of his size. He was so slight.
Yeah.
And it was a different game then, wasn't it, Kev?
No, it was, but he was a really infuriating... People of our generation will be going, I know exactly who he's going to mention now. Because the aforementioned many times Jerry Murphy and Vince Hillier had an almost telepathic relationship, but only sort of once every three games.
Right. It's not a bad ratio.
There were times when some of the passes from Murphy to Vince Hillier, and Vince Hillier against Brighton he always raised his game against Brighton, Vince Hillier. Mm-hmm.
Good, he was,
and really nice bloke as well. And obviously, again, there weren't that many. It's just when black players were starting to sort of make an impact. There weren't that many black players in English, so of course, suffered dreadfully from
terrorist abuse.
Terrorist abuse. But you talk to him now, he's very dignified and honourable, and it's really genuinely. Nice bloke, and he was a really good
player. Does he rank in Palace's, and we include Balassi and Wolf in here, in Palace's best ever wingers?
Oh, it's really hard.
It's always hard, fairly high,
yeah,
because you'd say, you know, if you put Don Rogers and Balassi together, yeah, Balassi's 15 yards quicker than he is. And yeah, but then again, Balassi might not be able to do it on the sort of pitches. But yeah, he's definitely, I mean, Peter Taylor, Don Rogers, Vince has got to be up there without a doubt. Yeah. And I arguably, in terms of crossing and goal scored, probably better than Zaha. I mean, comparing to Zaha before you'd compare him to Balassi, simply because of the physique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Simply because of the frustration quality, because Vince was a little showboater sometimes. Vince was another of those who would beat people, and then
we all like having showboaters.
We do, but we've always had a thing at Palace. We've always prided ourselves on wing play, but in that team, I mean, that was I suppose you'd consider him almost a luxury player, really. But he was lucky enough to start playing for Palace when we were really good. And then he looked a little bit out of place when we were really bad and moved on. He had less success at Leeds and then Portsmouth. But
Speaking of Palace Brighton, as you brought up then, because Vince obviously famously scored a couple of goals against Brighton. I don't know if I mentioned this, the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund has been... Have I told...
With Andy Johnson.
With Andy Johnson. Did I mention that?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's the May...
I hear nothing else in my house.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, Travis is in the squad. Playing, Monday, May the 30th.
Travis in the squad?
He's in the squad. He's been called up. He actually thinks he's playing, so...
With Andy Johnson. So that's Monday, May the 30th, and this, it used to be at Lewis's Dripping Pan Stadium.
Yeah.
It's now at the Amex. this year.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, yeah. They've upgraded to the Amex. So
that's good.
AJ will be playing for Palace at Brighton.
Lovely.
Again.
That's really good.
And it's, yeah, Monday, May 30th, 6 o'clock kickoff, £5 tickets for adults, free for kids, and it all goes to the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund.
I think we'll all be there, so.
I'll be there for that. I think it's a bank holiday, isn't it?
I think it is Monday bank holiday. Yeah. But hopefully having AJ in the squad will not only bring more people to the gate, hopefully, but we'll get a win for Palace as well, because it's the time they won. We haven't won for a couple of years, so.
Yeah,
probably because I've been in the squad.
We weren't going to say anything, but is the reason why.
Well, yeah. I never missed a penalty, though. We've had loads of shootouts, never missed a penalty.
Scored some goals, we wouldn't need a shootout.
I've scored 3 goals over the years. Last goal I scored 2009, right, straight from the corner. There's more of a keeping error than anything. Right. Tuesday, 7th of March, 1995.
Ooh.
What did Chris Armstrong do?
Oh, did he score a goal against Wolves in the FA Cup?
Did he sign for...
Get sent off?
No.
Go in goal?
No. It was something away from the pitch.
Oh, he smoked his joint, didn't
yeah.
he?
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He became the first Premier League player
yeah.
to fail a drugs test and be suspended.
Yeah.
Was he the first one?
Apparently, yeah.
First Premier League player. That's only three years old.
First one to get caught.
First one to get caught, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go. But again, I know another fan. What a player he was for Palace. People remember him for the drugs test, but I mean, he was a
great player.
He was a great
still
player.
Still our
yeah,
top
yeah,
goal scorer in the Premier League.
Is
in the Premier
really?
League.
I don't know. That's interesting.
I think so.
That's a mad fact.
Well, he was another frustrating one in that he would suddenly, you'd say, for whatever you do, don't shoot from there. Oh, he scored.
Yeah.
What are you doing, you idiot? Oh.
But he had the air of unpredictability about him as well, yeah. which is what we
and confidence as well.
Very confident.
To the point
supremely,
of arrogance,
yeah. Which is what you need sometimes. You need in that
a little
position.
Bit, but then again, because he went to Tottenham.
Went to Tottenham.
Spurs, never quite. £4.5 million.
Never yeah, quite. Because yeah. did he play for England? Did he get picked for England?
I can't
think
remember.
So. I don't
he
think
thought
so.
He should, but he was. Yeah, again, he was a good player. Crikey, yeah. yeah, forget. Yeah. yeah.
But there was some great pictures of him a few years later with dreads. Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And he had
it
like
amazing.
Proper stoner dreads.
Yeah,
yeah.
Funny that. Yeah.
Weird that, wouldn't it?
Oh, Chris Armstrong, what a player. What a player.
Great
good.
Player.
Okay, right. Well, that's a good trip down memory lane for in this uh-huh. week.
Little joke there.
Oh.
So,
he didn't know he was doing it.
I didn't know. Well, part four, of course, we're going to look forward to Palace versus Liverpool. So join us in a bit. Welcome back to this week's 5-year plan podcast.
Hooray!
Pod 171.
Wow, that's a lot, isn't it?
Where's the time gone?
Where has it gone? We are getting to serious pod numbers now.
It's 171 weeks in. That's only 4 years, isn't it?
We haven't been doing it every.
You don't do it every week, though, do you?
We used to do it every fortnight.
Remember
we
used
to
do it? Yeah.
And then
back in the championship,
yeah. yeah. And then we upped it for the Premier League. So.
Wow.
Things always change the Premier League.
Yeah.
Premier League, right? What's part four? No, we've got sponsors. Sponsors.
What's part four?
It's been a long pod. Vector Printing, of course. Of course, are our sponsors.
Yeah.
And their website is vector.co.uk. And of course, that's Vector with a
K.
And they have some very sexy FYP, exclusive FYP t-shirts available for sale, which we all have one, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
There's
yes,
two.
Do.
There's an FYP one with the logo, which looks lovely. Yeah, and then there's a Vector with a K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should you be a fan of that slogan? I think we all are. And they are available for sale from the website tshirtmonster.com/FYP. You can also go to our website, which is fypfanzine.uk, and they're on there as well.
Okay, so, thank you.
Vector are also supplying some kit for the study centre as well.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Fantastic. There you go.
Which is thank you for them for that.
Good stuff. And of course, they are run by Palace fans as well, and that's why they are sponsoring the pod. And of course, another company.
Is that the reason why?
That is why,
didn't
yeah.
Know,
oh, 4 years
yeah,
later.
I wondered what the connection was.
I just
thanks
thought
for that.
I just thought
you're welcome.
All the business we must be putting yeah. in. Right?
Well, you'll be pleased to know as well that our other sponsors are also run by a Palace fan as well. And that is JCIS, the Global Research and Brand Consultancy from South London.
Right, okay.
Visit jc-is.com.
I will.
Yeah.
I will visit that.
Good.
I will visit that.
You've been promising that every week. Have you
but
ever,
I do.
Have
I visit it
every week.
In fact, after this pod, I'm going to get on the 109 to Brixton, and they're based in Brixton,
they are,
actually.
There
and
you
I was,
go.
I'm even
he's
bump
all about
into them.
Branding now, is he?
Bump into them, yeah.
The Enders brand.
Enders Brown, yeah.
Right. Part four, we look forward to the next game, and it's a big game for Palace. We've come out of that run of winnable games that we talked about a few months ago with 2 points. We've now got Liverpool at home. But if we're talking about winnable games, our record against Liverpool, I mean, we are their bogey team in the last couple of years. So is it, like I said earlier in the pod, is it the sort of game that Palace will pull a result out and everything will be all right?
Yes, it is. Short answer, it is. And, it, you know, as we said earlier on, I hopefully it's a half past one kickoff, I think, on Sunday. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a good time. It'll be, everybody's going to be excited. It's Liverpool. It's always a big game against Liverpool. It always has been. You know, it's always good playing one of the big four or whatever you want to call them. It'll be a great game. And, you know, I think we should be encouraged as well by the performance last night against Sunderland and the second half performance against West Brom. I know it's been going bad recently, but I think we should be encouraged by it, and we need to just, I think it's going to be a great game.
Every, I'm looking forward to it. Every single prediction I've made about upcoming games has turned out to go tits up. So I am saying nothing.
You're
basically right, yeah. So my inability to predict what should happen is good. The one thing we can guarantee is possibly the first time this season it will be the old Selhurst atmosphere, I think. With any luck, results will have gone our way the day before, and that will take a little bit of pressure off. You know, because if we go into that game 10 points ahead of the other teams with 9 games to go, then you're looking fine. Liverpool got Man United coming up in the UEFA Cup. They didn't. The atmosphere, as I say, looked pretty tense amongst them after. There's a lot of complaints to Liverpool fans about why Sturridge and Milner didn't take
in the cup final
penalties in the cup final. Okay. They've got a tricky game tonight against Man City. Their selection will be interesting, and also they, you know, I don't think Klopp will make it any different. They won't look forward to coming to Selhurst Park.
Well, is this Jurgen Klopp's first visit to Selhurst? It isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, and his first clash with Palace was a defeat.
Yeah, remember, what did he say about Palace?
Wasn't his first game. He said he didn't know much about us.
Was that the one?
No, but also remember that there was that interview he did earlier in the season where they hadn't lost for like 9 games apart from the one game.
Yeah,
he said, Crystal Palace, in a German accent rather than what I just did.
But it was against us that he complained about the fans leaving, and then
yes, it was.
So, yeah. But yeah, you wouldn't put it past Palace to do it, and I think in a way, I probably am glad that we're playing arguably better teams again, because we do tend to lift our game. And it'll be interesting to see how we approach it. But
We've talked before about a pod about mentality of players going into games where they don't win often. So that'll be playing on, you know, our record against Liverpool, them. And also, crucially, Bolasie's now back. Hate playing against Yannick Bolasie.
They do. And I've got a feeling that probably Benteke will start rather than. I think he'll save Sturridge probably for. And I don't care what people say about them being professional footballers. With a game against Man U coming up, which Liverpool fans would be much more wanting to win than against Palace. Because I don't think Liverpool, I know they joke about us being their bogey team, but I don't think Liverpool take us that seriously in terms of their firmament of rivals. And you'd argue that hopefully Benteke starting would work in our favour, because he hasn't got that mobility. Again, I've now made sure that Benteke scores.
Thanks, Kev.
But the thing is, it is impossible to predict now.
Yeah, so, it is.
But the only thing I'm really pleased about is I think the atmosphere will be, and as long as Clattenburg's not referee, we should be.
I have no idea who referee is.
We don't. But I'm looking forward. I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing Klopp on the.
Yeah, I am as well.
And I think it might agitate Pardew a little bit, because Pardew did go head to head with him at
There was a lovely photo of him telling him to shut up.
I think it'll be a good volatile.
And what, in terms of Palace team selection, who would you? I mean, I know we're limited in midfield, but would you put Ledley probably back in for Jedi?
I would.
I think it'll be the same lineup as last night, to be honest, to start with. I can't see him changing that much.
I think he'll start with. Depending on whether Zaha's fit. Do you think he'll start with Jedi again?
I think he'll start with Suarez,
be perfectly honest. But
I'd like to think he would.
But we think the rest of the team, Much has probably earned his place, hasn't he?
I was never as down on Much as other people were. But yes, he certainly has earned his place at the moment. And he's the one that seems to be aware of his position more than the other two at the moment. So I think Much deserves his
Adabo on the bench, I think, will be as is, and you know, maybe coming on with 15, 20 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just see, depending on how far we are ahead.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Well, you've both ruined it there. You've both ruined it. But I think, yeah, it's a game to look forward to. And it's just one of those games you never know with Palace.
It's one of those games, the reason, you know, it's one of those games that we're glad that we're in the Premier League, you know.
Yeah,
it's
one
of the
games. Good point, let's
you know, no sentiment in football and all that nonsense, but this is one of the games, these are games we enjoy. We're prepared against one of the biggest teams in the world, let's be honest.
Yeah. Well, it was a good chance of winning.
Well, yes, we have, but also, let's not forget, Liverpool are a good side.
Yes, for all
that they're not as big as they are, they're still a good side. You look at their squad, they've got some cracking players, especially up front. Yeah. And our home record isn't good. So I you know, if you're a professional gambler, you wouldn't be putting money on Palace to win it. But
well, I never bet on Palace.
But that's the beauty of football. Well, I was astonished. Somebody tweeted me to say this might be my fault, because on New Year's Day they put 20 quid on Palace to go down at 80-1.
So no way.
I was like, I'm not going to name him, but of course it's your fault, mate. Wow. No, it's definitely your fault.
Well, there you go. We found it. It wasn't you and the cat and the pod music. It was that guy.
So I told him that he had to put money on every other team in the Premier League going down now as well. So hopefully he did that at half time last night. But that's the thing about the Premier League is it's not the best league in the world technically, but it is in terms of excitement and in terms of unpredictability.
Yes.
And you can't. You know, if this was Italian football, Spanish football, you'd say, no, we haven't got a chance against a team that size. But for all sorts of factors, we have. The weather's apparently going to be bad at the weekend. It's live on TV.
It's like the other day when we were on Sky Sports on Saturday, and I was saying to my family, I said, if you're not a fan of either of these two teams, West Brom or Palace, why would you say, oh, I'm out of five?
Yeah.
But on Sunday lunchtime, if you're not a fan of Liverpool or Palace, and you're a football fan, you'll know the history,
exactly.
And you'll go, I'm watching that game. That's potentially going to be a cracker.
Exactly.
Great point.
And that's what's exciting about it.
And also, remember when we beat them last season, we were coming off a pretty poor run. Warnock was manager.
Yeah.
And we beat them 3-1, went 1-0 down, beat them 3-1, deserved to beat them.
Yeah.
And that came out of nowhere. That one.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Good. Well, let's hope there's more of that on Sunday.
And you know, we have the players to do it. We've got the players to do it. We really do. It's not we're not dreaming here.
Yeah.
No.
We actually have the players to do it. It will not be a massive shock if we do beat Liverpool.
It won't. Well, good.
It's first thing in the morning, so we could still be dreaming. I should technically still be dreaming.
It isn't even 10 o'clock yet in the morning.
I've been up for way too long. But good. Okay, well, you'll hear from us, listeners. Oh, we'll be back after the Liverpool game to talk about whatever happened in that. But thank you, Kevin and James, for being here.
Not at all.
Listeners, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.